Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. All right. Well, I think the music finally stopped playing loudly in the apartment next to mine, so we can roll out the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, luckily it's Friday.
Start spreading the news.
There you go. There's your tip off that Schomburg Stu is here to join me. Stu, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Enjoying the nice weather today. Hope it lasts.
So, yeah, you know, we're due for a little bit of nice weather here, aren't we, for a change?
Absolutely.
So, but hey, you know, if you'd like to call into the podcast and talk to Stu or, you know, maybe me even if you really want to do that, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still haven't found a way to get Stu on Twitter, but feel free to reach out to me at BurkeTime, and I can pass any information you need or want along to Stu. See how that works out? So, all right, so what's going on so far today? What have you liked or what have you seen or what did you hear?
Nothing exciting going on in the world of sports, but I know that Tim Tebow is going to be the receiver this season in the NFL. Is that correct?
Yes, he's going to be a tight end, as a matter of fact. So it will be interesting to see how that ends up playing out.
Yeah, well, he wasn't very good as a quarterback, so I'm not quite sure why they made the decision to sign him as a tight end.
So, well, you know, to be fair, as a starting quarterback in the NFL, he actually has a winning record. So, he wasn't terrible. I mean, they managed to win games with him under center. He even won a playoff game. Which I think is more than you can say for Mitchell Trubisky, who was taken second in the draft, if I remember correctly.
I believe you're correct there. You're spot on. But he's been out of the NFL for a few years, though, and so we'll see if he can get back into the swing as a tight end.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see how long that takes. If or how or whatever the situation works with that. And the weird part was this was actually suggested to Tebow many years ago. I believe when he was in Patriots camp, they actually suggested that he look into making the switch to tight end, and he said no, he wanted to be a quarterback, and they ended up cutting him. Because, you know, the Patriots are one of those teams that, in general, at the time, well, they had Tom Brady and only liked to carry two quarterbacks. So, they didn't want Tebow as their third guy. And then, he played a little for the Jets, but, nothing huge. He did have he was actually offered the opportunity to go to the Canadian Football League and be a quarterback, but he turned it down. And then, as we know, the story goes, he played baseball.
Yeah, not very well.
No, but he drew, so that was a big plus for, any team he was on.
Yeah, seems to me that when the Bears had Bobby Douglas as their quarterback, wasn't there talk or suggestions about converting him to a receiver or possibly even a tight end?
Yeah, you know, every now and then that talk pops up with quarterbacks about, oh, yeah, you know, we should, you know, move him here or try him there. But very few guys actually end up doing it, you know, especially on a permanent basis. There are guys like Taysom Hill who play other positions during games. And then, of course, you know, Cordell Stewart, they called Slash because he also played some wide receiver. But, you know, in general, if a guy's going to change position, you know, they change immediately coming out of college. You know, Julian Edelman was a quarterback at, I believe it was Kansas State. And then I'm trying to think, there was a Antoine Randall-L played right here in the Big Ten at Indiana. So, you know, he made the big switch to receiver and had a very good career. So guys have done it.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how he does.
Yeah, well, you know, and to be fair, he's got to make the team first.
Yes,
so.
Also true. No guaranteed salary, right, or contract.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, what's going to happen there, but, you know, we'll see. And obviously the reason he's coming back is because he's playing for Urban Meyer, who was his college coach at Florida. And, you know, they obviously had quite a bit of success there together. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, like the oddity with this whole story for me is just kind of the way the media has taken to the fact where they just want to dog this guy no matter what he does. And like I actually wrote about this in the blog on Wednesday, and I guess what I would question is, do you think it has to do with the fact that he puts his faith front and center and he's not shy about it, and the media has an issue with that?
I'm sure that's a factor, and I'm not sure if that that's a factor that in his favor or not in his favor, but I always thought that he's a little bit too exuberant when he does a good play or does something well, or his team wins the game and he goes into his religious convictions. A little bit too much up front as far as I'm concerned, but you know where I stand on that, but that's another issue entirely. I guess the press doesn't like it either.
Yeah, you know, and you wonder, because I do remember Kurt Warner, you know, he was another guy like that, and, you know, he was the guy, and I'm sure you've heard athletes do it, that anytime they wanted to interview him, the first thing he said was he had to thank his Lord Jesus Christ. And, you know, Tebow's another one of those guys who would always do that. And, you know, I know Kurt Warner took a lot, and I mean a lot of heat over that. So, you know, and I don't understand why. I mean, you know, it's, you know, everybody's allowed their own beliefs.
Right.
You know, we saw Reggie White's son when he inducted Reggie White into the Hall of Fame do that, and nobody had a problem with it. You know, and Reggie White was a minister, and
no,
nobody
that's true.
Seemed to have an issue with that. So
if
you
I remember
wonder
correctly,
why.
If I remember correctly, didn't Muhammad Ali usually start his victory speech after he vanquished another boxer in a title defense, give thanks to Allah before he started talking?
Yeah, I believe, you know, I don't know if he started all of them like that, but I have heard and seen clips of him starting like that. So, you know, a lot of athletes have done it, but for some reason the media seems to frown on it.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to separation of church and state type of philosophy on their part.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, whatever they look at. But, I mean, that shouldn't factor in on if a guy is a good athlete or not, should it?
No, it should not. It should not. If a guy is a talented athlete, we can put all that stuff aside and just look for his performance in the field, no matter what, if it's baseball, football, basketball, or any of the sports.
Yeah, because I don't you know, I'm trying to remember. I don't believe they generally will bring up a player's religion or anything like that. I do know every now and then they, not so much the sports shows, but there will be places that'll mention if an athlete is Jewish. And again, I don't know why that matters. But
probably
you know,
because
I
so
have
few of them. There's probably because
yeah,
there's so
be.
Few of them in professional sports.
So yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah. Did you know that Jack Peterson is Jewish?
No, I did not know that.
I believe someone told me that he is, and I'm assuming that they're correct, but I've never really investigated one way or the other. But they were pretty sure that they were that he was.
So yeah, you know, it hasn't been anything. I can honestly say I've never cared about what religion a player is. So.
Yeah, you're talking about the ball player or Muhammad Ali, for example, talking about Allah before he gave his interview after a fight. Well, hey, what about the Sheik? Didn't he always pray to Allah before he started his matches too?
Yeah, and well, you know, and to be fair, religion has always been a big part of professional wrestling. They've always had characters portray, you know, certain types of religious, characters.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And after World War II ended, of course, a lot of the heels portrayed a German, an evil German. And for example, Guy Lerose from Quebec was a French Canadian, but he became Hans Schmidt and was one of the most successful heels in the 50s. And in fact, in one year, I think he was the number one box office attraction in pro wrestling, ahead of Fez and Gagne and O'Connor and Carpentier and Rocca, because of that persona, the evil German persona.
Yeah, I remember when I started watching, it was the heels, the big heels were Germans, either a Baron von Raschke type guy or Russian. They were the two that really, you know, were always on top as the heel character.
And the Iron Sheik, of course, was another one who...
Yeah.
He came along, yeah.
The Iranian area came along a little later, after I started watching. But I remember Von Raschke was the top AWA heel when I started watching, you know, good old Vern Gagne and his promotion then.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And there was the
you know,
angle...
And then Ivan...
You remember the WWE angle when Sergeant Slaughter became a supporter of one of the Middle Eastern countries for a temporary period of time.
I believe he became an Iraq sympathizer.
Became. That didn't last too long, though.
And then they had, you know, remember WWE had that huge character, I believe he was portraying a Muslim, that was gigantically over as a heel and was even, I believe he was even in a feud with The Undertaker. That's how over the character was. But then they had to drop it due to all the, you know, the political pressure, basically, and the character just disappeared.
Yeah, and the character was too good. He was too good at portraying the evil Muslim character, and he was so good that there was so many complaints that I think he finally went into acting, if I'm not mistaken. I believe he carved a career out for himself in Hollywood after that.
Yeah, you know, I honestly hope he did, because the funny thing is he wasn't Muslim. He was strictly acting. And
yes.
I remember reading an article about him that said that actually hurt his acting career at first because people remembered him.
Yeah, he was just too good.
So.
Talk about getting a character over effectively and then wound up backfiring on him.
Yeah. You go out there and you do your job as a wrestler and then it takes, you know, you've got to almost apologize for doing your job because you did it too well.
Yes, I may have mentioned this story, but Hans Schmidt, as I mentioned, the number one box office attraction in maybe 54, 55 because of the evil German persona that he portrayed. At one time in Milwaukee, they tried to boot him out of, they tried to, the commission tried to boot him out of the country, deport him back to Germany. They believed the hype. They were kind of embarrassed, of course, when they found out that he's actually a Canadian. So even the commission was fooled by what he portrayed.
Well, you know, especially back then, you know, there was a lot more realism to it with, you know, how characters were portrayed, and the business was incredibly protected.
Obviously.
So
that doesn't happen anymore, and it's no longer protected, and it's a whole different in fact, he even mentioned, by the way, they did an interview with him and when he retired back to Canada, and he says, I don't know what it is now, he said, but it's not wrestling. When they asked him about the current crop of professional wrestling. Okay. And
well, you
learn,
I'm sure a lot of the old times feel like that, I bet.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. It's a whole different ballgame.
Because yeah, it's just such a different world with the way things are portrayed, and once Vince McMahon opened it up so he could get that entertainment designation that he so badly wanted, you know, that just opened the floodgates.
It did, and eventually leading to the elimination of this athletic commission, the state athletic commission. So they can get away with a lot more than they did now than they did then.
Which, to be honest, was not a bad thing because pretty much all those guys were corrupt. So,
well, you've had your dealings with them over the years, both as a wrestler and as a promoter.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, you got to remember there were multiple guys in the Illinois Athletic Commission that actually are currently in jail because they were involved in that license to bribe scandal.
Yeah, well, Illinois has that reputation for so many years of being corrupt, and to this day, that reputation is well-founded.
Yeah, because we had, I remember one of the biggest issues we had with the commission was, and this was when China was very popular in WWE, and she would always wrestle men. So we had scheduled, a woman versus man match. And, we had the match, and the commission didn't say anything until afterwards. And then they wanted to fine us. And when we asked them why WWE could do it and we couldn't, their excuse was because they have entertainment in their name. And I'm like, so if we add an E on to the back of our name, there's no problem?
Yeah, did they actually follow through with the fine?
No, I think we had to slip the guy something under the table to get him to not do anything. that's pretty much how that worked. You know, that and the fact that they took 10% of your gate as an independent fed, and they took nothing from WWE. Because Vince McMahon told him if they took 10% from him, he wouldn't run shows in Illinois.
Yeah, I'm sure those shows are quite lucrative in terms of the fans in attendance always probably turned out in big numbers, and they made a lot of money because of those shows, those house shows here.
The guys working that show for the state got their payday anyways, so it didn't matter if the state got their money as long as the guys got their money.
Yeah, that's all that counted, right?
Yeah, that was the only thing that mattered. So. Well,
you're asking me about stories. Yeah. I have to ask you about this because I'm going to rely on your memory, which is a lot better than mine. But there was an interesting article this week in the NBA about a player who hadn't played for quite some time in the NBA, came back after many years not playing. He was 41 years old, and 2 or 3 minutes into the game, he got thrown out. Did you read that one?
Yeah. I believe that was Udonis Haslam of the Miami Heat. I thought that was quite humorous because he's always been, he was always a legitimate tough guy in the NBA. You know, he was their enforcer for a very long time, and he had quite a bit to say on a couple shows about the softness of today's NBA player. So I found it quite humorous when I heard that. He made his season debut, and it only lasted 3 minutes because he got ejected.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, I have to tend to agree with him regarding today's NBA player anyway. I think he's spot on. I think they're a lot much softer than they were years ago.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, that's, you know, as a whole, I think every not only every sport, but just about every person, you know, when you look, everything is just much softer around the edges and everything is politically correct now. So, but yeah, I know the other thing is, you know, the altercation he got into was with Dwight Howard of the 76ers. Howard will actually have to now serve a one-game suspension because he got his 16th technical during that scuffle or whatever they had. I don't think they scuffled, but they, you know, got chesty or whatever you want to call it. So
he was quite respectful, though, about his thoughts about Howard after they were tossed out of the game.
Yeah, you know,
I think he enjoyed the altercation, actually.
Probably. You know, Howard has been one of the guys through his career that has kind of stood up to other guys. So, you know, I'm not surprised that those two ended up being the two that went head-to-head, but, you know.
Well, Howard has had a long, long career in the NBA.
Yeah, you know, I don't believe he ever ended up being as successful as people thought he was going to be, because remember, he was the first pick in the draft coming out of high school. Not that obviously he's not the only guy who has ever had that issue as the number one pick, especially in the NBA. That happens quite a bit there. But, yeah, you know, I mean, when you look at it, obviously he probably has generational wealth after his career.
I'm sure. And another player like that who was highly drafted and had a long, long career was the former Bull, Tyson Chandler.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was actually still on the roster to start this season.
Yeah, it's amazing how long he's played.
So, but you know, if you're willing to do the things like Chandler does, and you know, play defense and rebound, especially being 7 foot, you know, they can find, you know, short minutes for you here and there on teams. You know, and I think Howard learned that, you know, towards the end of his career here, he's going to play defense and rebound, and you know, they're going to keep paying him.
Yeah, both of those guys have wound up making a nice buck on the fringe element in the NBA. Although Chandler, I think, had a few decent seasons. He had a few decent seasons, not just a fringe player after he was traded from the Bulls.
Yeah, you know, I would never say he was a superstar. But, you know, he was definitely a starter. You know, he wasn't just some bum who, you know, kind of tagged along from, you know, team to team just picking up his paycheck. So
no, he was a hard worker. One thing, unlike his counterpart, who was also drafted at the same time, Eddie Curry, at Chandler turned out to be a very, very hard worker. And he's earned a lot of bucks because of it.
So, yeah, you know, Chandler debuted in 2001-02, obviously with the Bulls, and he actually was in the league last year. He played 26 games with the Rockets. So he played from the age of 19 to the age of 37. So...
and we always say this, but we hope that he invested his money wisely.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, again, you know, he never was a great scorer. He only averaged over 10 points in his career in 4 seasons, and the highest his point-per-game average ever was 11.8. You know, obviously he was a top rebounder, and, you know, he could block shots and defend, and that's what his job was.
Yeah, and he did it very well. And, yeah, I guess the days of the one-dimensional rebounder are probably over now in the NBA. I'm sure there are some players who still do it, like you said, Howard, and some other ones. But I don't think the amount of players who make a living doing that have kind of diminished over the years.
Yeah, you know, it's going to get harder and harder to see those guys unless they can shoot three-pointers. So, you know, and I don't know, you know, like I know Dwight Howard has actually shot a few this year and has actually made a couple. Obviously, he's not a great three-point shooter. He's shooting 25% from behind the arc, but you know, every now and then he makes them, and, you know, that you know, everybody gets – the fans get excited because, you know, the big guy – remember when Manute Bol or Dennis Rodman would shoot one, everybody would get all excited.
Yeah, so, every once in a while, Rodman would actually have one go in, but quite infrequently.
You know, that's just kind of how it, you know, how it goes, but
– I have to tell you that I'm agreeing with you now. I wasn't quite sure, but I was trying to watch some of the Bulls game against Toronto, and I can't watch it more than a minute or two. It's so dull now. The NBA seems so dull. And like you say, it's a three-point game, and there doesn't seem to be too much in the way of hard-nosed defense, and it's different now. It just doesn't have that excitement that it did years ago.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's difficult to watch. I forgot what game they were talking about. I think they played it Wednesday night. And there were actually commentators talking about the fact that these two teams may combine for 300 points.
Yeah,
and
I was
just kind of
unbelievable.
Kind of like, okay, who wants to watch that?
Yeah, I just can't. It's just yeah, I remember seeing the high-scoring game. That's right, and it wasn't—I don't think it was an overtime game either. I think it went into which is a regulation game.
So yeah, it's just kind of, you know, just kind of what the NBA game is now.
And I don't anticipate them doing very well in the ratings when it comes to the playoffs either.
No, you know, the way, you know, they tanked last year. And I don't suspect it being any better this year. So, you know, we'll have to see.
Yeah, I just can't see them doing very well in the ratings. I just cannot see them doing with this style of basketball that's played now.
Yeah, you know, what's very odd is the style now is very reminiscent to what the ABA used to play when, you know, they started up. You know, that was the style they wanted because they wanted to contrast with what the NBA was doing. So they were trying to give people a different version of basketball. But
yeah,
yeah,
it was a
now
lot more high scoring.
Just,
that's right. That's right. And we've become the ABA, huh?
Yeah, basically. Because, you know, they instituted the three-point line. You know, and they also had the dunk contest. So, you know, and obviously they had a lot of talented guys. You know, they had guys like David Thompson and Julius Erving that came through those leagues who could, you know, both guys could get off the floor and really dunk.
And
but,
don't forget,
you know,
Curtis Gilmore also came for the ABA.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I always wonder is, like, how many points would a guy like Pete Maravich score in today in today's NBA?
Yeah.
You know, he'd probably average 5 games.
Yeah, he would be scoring a huge number. But if I remember correctly, the ABA, didn't they use that gimmick basketball? The it was a regulation basketball, but it was red, white, and blue, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I actually had one as a kid because I thought it was cool.
Hey, it could be a collector's item now. So hold on to that. And maybe the next time Antique Roadshow comes into our area, right, so maybe you can get something for it.
Yeah. Sadly, we wore it out, and it ended up just deflating. So, like most of my sporting, not only equipment but career. So,
you still have your old gloves and bats and cleats somewhere?
I have gloves and I have wrestling gear left, but the wrestling gear doesn't fit now because I'm no longer the big Jack. I'm kind of on the way to being the middle Jack, I guess it would be.
Well, with your new improved diet, that's what happens.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what everybody says. Well, you know, now you can go back to wrestling. I said, no, I can't. I don't have anything that fits. So.
And what about how many action figures do you have left of yourself as a memento?
Actually, I never had any. There is one. My buddy Botch made one for me when I was in Fire Pro. It actually was originally a Bubba Ray Dudley figure, but he converted it and put a towel on it and, you know, added the Big Jack gear to it. And I believe, if I remember correctly, I believe Tristan Hayes owns it right now. But, yeah, I've never had it. And the only actual, like, wrestling figure I have is somebody bought me a Lance Storm ECW one for Christmas one year. So I do have that, and it is actually still in the pouch in case any collector is out there wondering. If you want to make me an offer, 646-478-3753, or feel free to email me, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. So
that's an interesting action figure you got there. This is a guy who can actually work in the ring pretty decently, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's why I liked him. So that's why they bought it for me, because they knew I liked him.
Yeah, he was a talented worker.
Yeah, and he's a fantastic trainer. A lot of his students now are in not only AEW, but WWE as well. So.
Yeah,
he's had particular success with training women. I had to make sure I phrased that right. I almost said he's had particular success with women, but you could take that a lot of different ways. No,
yeah,
he's been actually had success training women to wrestle. So.
Yeah, he must be a good trainer. He must be a good trainer.
So yeah, so and, you know, he was giving it up. He was finally retiring.
Yeah, maybe
I don't know if that's...
Maybe you're right about that. You could be right about that. But now all the trainers have to start teaching the wrestlers just one style of wrestling that seems so prevalent nowadays. 20 or 30 near falls and clotheslines and...
Yeah. And hit everything.
Escaping the ropes on a submission hold and a big beat down of one wrestler to the other.
Yeah.
Every match is the same that way, isn't it?
Pretty much, and that's the only major difference between like WWE and AEW is in AEW, a wrestler can wrestle their own style. In WWE, you have to wrestle WWE style.
It looks like AEW is condoning blading too, because there were some blade jobs that were done recently.
Yes, yeah, they're much more liberal with allowing wrestling to be a little more wrestling-like. To be fair, that's nice to see. It's always weird when you're watching a cage match and a guy gets rammed face first into it and there's no blood.
Nothing,
you
right.
You know, it's kind of like, and all they talk about is how, this is supposed to just pair you up and, you know, yet these guys can take it and, you know, there's no ill effect to it.
Yeah. Some of the fans are speculating that it was easy to see when Jericho bladed the other day. I was at a week or two ago, and you could see him doing the job on the blading. No matter how hard they can see it, I guess if you look for it hard enough, you could find it.
Yeah, in some cases, it's easy to pick up. Because it is difficult to hide, especially when you got cameras all over the place. Because, you know, when you're wrestling, you don't know what camera they're shooting you with. You know, you're not looking for the red light. You're worried about where you're going next in the match. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, a lot of that got picked up. Like, I'm still wondering, you know, I don't read lips, but I saw the highlight of, Jericho on his knees on the cage and MJF standing in front of him, and you could see Jericho talking. So I was dying to know what he was saying. I've been dying for somebody to translate it, you know, get a lip reader and figure out what he said. Because I'm assuming they were setting up the spot where he got pushed off, because that was the big thing that happened next.
Yeah, and they botched that camera angle too, because you could see the protection when he fell.
Unfortunately, they took a lot of heat for that. But like I said a couple weeks ago when you and I talked about it, what did people think they fell on?
Yeah, right, and... They want an actual life destroyed because they want the believability of a stunt like that.
Yeah, you know, it's not the backyard anymore where, you know, you you know, they're landing on whatever the hell they're landing on. So it's actual professional wrestling, and they don't want to hurt anybody, you know, at least not intentionally.
Yeah, there's one spot I saw, in, believe it or not, in Hawaii, 1968. They showed a clip of it, and there was concrete on the floor in those days. And they pushed Jim Hady. I don't know if you ever heard of the wrestler Jim Hady, Gentleman Jim Hady. Wrestled a lot in Detroit and a little bit in Chicago and very popular in Hawaii. But they tossed him off the balcony, and he landed on the concrete, and it looked like it was a long drop. So I'm not sure how he pulled that one off.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, how some of these guys get through it without serious injury. You know, I mean, we saw for years that nut New Jack jumping off like balconies and scaffolds in ECW, and there was no real padding on the floor. But he did it, you know, and that's, I'm assuming, where the cocaine comes into play, because he did it over and over.
Yeah, wasn't there a scaffold match he had with, and the wrestler was afraid to fall, and New Jack just pushed him off the scaffold. The wrestler may have broken his leg or was seriously injured,
but he pulled the cord. They were up there. He tells that story in his – they did a New Jack Dark Side of the Ring, and he tells that story about how they're up on the scaffold. I believe it was Vic Grimes he was wrestling.
I believe you're right. Yes, that's right.
And he tells him, he goes, I can't do it. He goes, no, there's no way I can do this. And New Jack just grabbed him, and he said, we're going on three, and he went on two.
That's funny. But, talk about a crazy, crazy wrestler. His face was really scarred badly. His forehead, I mean, from the blading over the years.
Yeah, and, you know, the odd part is, like, he was never the guy who suffered the serious injury doing all that stuff. It was always the people he worked.
Yeah, there was that one other story, but when he wrestled that rookie who pleaded to get into an ECW ring, and he said, "All right, you're gonna. It's a squash match. You're gonna bleed." And he said, anything. And he was afraid to blade. And so New Jack took care of that for him. And the guy gushed gallons of blood. I mean, it was a horrible blading that he did. You're familiar with that story.
That kid unfortunately is dead now.
I think he was a suicide years later. But that had nothing to do with wrestling.
He had complications from his surgery, and it ended up killing him.
Oh, maybe so. Okay.
But,
yeah,
he was only, like, 17, and he had only trained a little bit. And, you know, I know his wrestling name was Mass Transit. He dressed up as, like, a bus driver. So, New Jack really took advantage of him being a rookie. So.
Yeah, and just talk about a blade job that went wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, and unfortunately, you know, guys have been known to do that. I actually had a big argument with a veteran in PCW who actually is still involved with POW, but is not Jimmy Blaze. Don't get me wrong there if you're listening locally. And he took advantage of a rookie. The kid was in, like, his second or third match and just really lit the kid up. We had a battle royal later in the night, and I told him I would be looking for him. And he eliminated himself as soon as the battle royal started because he was afraid of me, because I was going to beat the living hell out of him just to show him what it was like.
There's no excuse for taking care of a kid like that.
No, but the weird part is that's how it could be. You know, your first match out there, you got your rear end kicked. You know, luckily I was in with a veteran who was cool. But there were so many guys who would take advantage of you back when I started, but slowly that phased out, and I hope they don't do it anymore.
And didn't Bob Holly of the WWE have that reputation and by going really legit tough against some of these trainees and tough enough and manhandling them very badly?
Yeah, there have been guys. Bob Holly was one. You know, JBL was another. You know, guys who would take advantage of the trainees or the rookies or guys, or, you know, even like when they brought jobbers in, when they used to do that on a lot of the WWE shows, you know, they would take advantage of them and just literally beat the hell out of them.
there was that famous incident with JBL and Blumini, and it was a battle royal, and he just bloodied them the hard way.
Yeah, well, you know, if you remember, they ran into the problem with Kurt Angle when he tried to take advantage of that one tough enough kid who was actually a trained MMA fighter. And the kid got him in a Kimura arm lock and almost broke his arm.
Was that Daniel Pewter who did that? I think maybe that was that him?
Yeah, yes it was.
Yeah, I remember that very, very vividly. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, because they didn't think Angle would have any problem with the kid because, you know, Angle, obviously a gold medal Olympic wrestler, you know, he made a mistake. And when that happens, you know, MMA guys can take advantage of that. I mean, you see it in all their fights. One mistake, the guy loses.
Yeah.
And, they had to count Pewter's shoulders to the mat to save Angle.
Yeah, that's right. And, that was surprising. And I'm sure that Angle was surprised by that. Not to say he wasn't a great wrestler, though. Obviously, he has the credentials.
No.
He's a great amateur wrestler.
You know, and definitely, you know, another one of the guys who in the ring would have been legitimately tough to deal with, you know, with his background, but he didn't have any MMA training.
No. Yeah, there are a lot of tough guys over the years. We always talk about some of the old-timers like Luthez, who would... When they try to do a double cross, and they always like to have him as a champion because the double cross wouldn't work. And Dan Hodge.
Yes, in the day, they used to be called hookers.
That's right. And in fact, his biography is called Hooker.
Yeah.
And he's a lot of interesting stories there about what went on behind the scenes when they try to pull double crosses on you, and it didn't work with Lou Fez in there because he was legit. Tough guy.
Yeah, well, you know, and that was the thing. But, you know, when you had your champion traveling throughout the territory, you know, everybody wanted that title in their territory. So, you know, and Harley Race was another guy, you know, who was legitimate tough guy. So he carried the title for a long time because it would be really difficult to double-cross him.
Yeah, he was insanely tough, Harley Race. So there's a lot of interesting stories about what takes place in some of these matches over the years.
So, yeah,
I don't think you see too much of that now.
No, there, you know, because there are no real territories. You know, everybody's their own little independent Fed, and I have wondered, you know, and I know Sandman brought this up to us years ago. He was trying to set up where he had three established territories. One out west, one in Chicago, and then he was looking for a place down south. But the problem he was having was the indie feds didn't want to work together because everybody's their own pig-headed version of what they think wrestling was. But, you know, I mean, it sounded like a legitimate good idea and a nice way to build the company, and that would rotate talent every so many months through the three territories.
Yeah, that would have been a great idea.
He couldn't get people to agree to do it.
Yeah. You are you familiar with the story that took place? I guess PL was going to get a big salary. There was some kind of a super independent Fed supposed to be starting in the Chicago area.
Yeah, it was
never
all
happened.
Gigantic work. So he signed guys to contracts. He put out the big deal about what he was going to do and how he was going to do it. They had a gigantic press conference in Chicago, oddly on the same day we were running a show, and all the guys he had signed to contracts came to our show afterwards and hung out with us.
Yeah, it turned out to be not what anybody was envisioning happening.
The guy talked a good game,
but he couldn't deliver.
Yeah, never even ran a show. So I want to say his name was like John Collins or something like that.
Could be right, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, the humorous thing you mentioned, PL, he signed the contract and quit the job he had. And then, obviously, he was never paid. I believe some people tried to sue the guy, but I don't think they got anything. And PL's old job wouldn't hire him back. He had to go out and find another job.
Yeah, he really believed the hype. He thought it was legit.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, and it just, you know, because I know he signed one of our women wrestlers at the time. She signed with him as well, but she never left. She stayed with us waiting for him to tell her when the first show was. So.
She's still waiting, huh?
Yeah. So, definitely. I think, all those guys are still waiting. You know, nobody got a dime. And, you know, he had all these big plans, but, you know, it never went anywhere. And, you know, that's one of those things that you hear a lot of those rumors in wrestling, but this was one of the first guys, I think, that ever had a press conference. And basically, if he would have ever started, it would have been the Herb Abrams UWF again, all over again.
Yeah. Did he approach you?
No. No, he didn't. The only local wrestlers he approached were, for whatever reason, besides PL, were guys in the LWF. So I don't know what he was looking for. He had allegedly signed a bunch of old ECW guys, and those were the guys who ended up at our show that night, because I had an incredibly long conversation with Chris Chetty and Danny Doring, who came up to me after my match and told me what a great job I had done and must have spent 45 minutes talking to me about wrestling. So.
Yeah, they were decent. They were smaller on the smaller size, weren't they? They were mainstays in ECW for a long time.
Yeah, Doring was a smaller guy. Chetty was actually a pretty big dude, and he was heavily muscled. He was well built.
Yeah, I
don't know if you remember, they had a character at ECW at the time called Chili Willie, who was very entertaining.
Yes.
And didn't cost much. So we had booked him and brought him in. So all those guys showed up to see him. Like, we not only do we have Chetty and Doring, we had Jasmine St. Clair, who was working there at the time. New Jack stopped by to see us because he wanted to hang out. Because he had actually worked a show for us in Wisconsin, and he liked us, so he stopped by to see us. And there were a couple other guys who floated in. Tracy Smothers stopped by, and there was one other guy, and I'm drawing a blank who it was, that came to the show to hang out. So that was nice. You know, and they were all good guys behind the scene.
Yeah, you never had any problem with New Jack or any of those guys, did you?
No. Not at all. Oddly enough, the only person we ever brought in that I had problems with was Francine. Because she was just incredibly opinionated and didn't like anything we wanted her to do.
Also, Jim Harris wasn't cooperative, was he? That was Kamala. You tried to get him in there and pay a decent buck for him, but he wouldn't do a job or even a double count out.
Not only would he would not lose, he wouldn't be pinned, obviously he wouldn't submit, he wouldn't lose by disqualification, and yeah, you couldn't even do the double count out with him. It was win or nothing. And oddly, they were trying to book him against me.
And this is what he was in the downward side at that point in time, or?
No, he was not quite there yet. This was right at the first time when he had just been diagnosed with his diabetes and he really needed money. So we honestly thought we were just trying to help him out because, you know, he was asking like $700-$800. So we, you know, he still had good name value. So we were trying to book him and he was just impossible to work with. But oddly, I know other promoters who have worked with him and didn't give them any problems.
Yes. I wonder what the difference was.
Yeah.
He certainly could have used the money, as you pointed out.
You know, and the weird part is it's such a case-by-case basis. Like, we had Shane Douglas in, and he couldn't have been better to work with, even though I know people who had problems with him. And then I worked a show with the Honky Tonk Man, you know, good old Wayne Ferris, and I had heard from multiple people that he was a big issue on indie shows. He was a fantastic guy with us.
Don't you think he was underrated as a wrestler? I think he actually wrestled Lou Fez a couple of times in the South, and Fez said he was a pretty good worker.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he never really got to show his skill set in WWE because he had to be the honky-tonk man. But, you know, yeah, when you go back and you look at his other tapes before he got there, he's a quality in-ring performer. So, you know, and then oddly, the other guy who for whatever reason gave us a lot of problems when I was on a show with him was Axe, Bill Eddy of the of Demolition. Smash couldn't have been nicer. Smash actually walked in and went around and introduced himself to everybody in the locker room, where generally you do that to them. You go up to guys like that and you introduce yourself. Eddie sat in the corner and didn't say anything to anybody, and then accused people of stealing his cell phone and his watch. As it turned out, he dropped his cell phone getting out of his rental car, and it was still out there, and he left his watch in his hotel room. When he found his cell phone, he called his wife, and she had it.
Of course, he didn't apologize for these accusations either when he found out they weren't justified.
He ran late, so when I bumped into him, I said, "Nice to meet you, you know, I'm so-and-so, glad you made it." And he didn't even say hello, he just kind of grunted at me. You know, and I get it. At once upon a time, he was a gigantic superstar, not only his acts, but his, you know, the mass superstar. But those days were long gone. So.
Their reputation, they think they're still dealing with the reputation that they had when they were in their prime 10 years before.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there are guys like that. You do run into them. I know, when PCW brought Ric Flair in, he made that indie appearance for them. They had a lot of problems with him, but that's not surprising to me at all.
Oh, I'd never heard that story. That sounds interesting. He was kind of a prima donna type?
It's mostly backstage stuff. Like, he had to, obviously he had to fly first class. He had to be booked in the best hotel. So, he had to have certain meals, it had to be top shelf stuff. So, and then he didn't want to drive. He wanted a limo. He wanted to be limoed around everywhere. So, yeah, it was just all kind of stuff like that.
That's like the gimmick he portrayed on TV when he was a champion.
Pretty much. He wanted his money. You have to end those guys half their money. Whatever their payday is, you send them half and you give them the other half when they show up. You know, unlike a lot of guys who will wait till after the show to get their money, he wanted his immediately as soon as he walked in the door.
And did he get it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were, obviously they paid him and took care of him. But, guys like that, you don't expect on the indie scene. So it's not surprising that he acted exactly that way. So,
was he just in for an autograph signing? He wasn't competing or anything.
Oh, God, no. They stopped having those guys compete after I left. They just came in and did autographs. None of them ever wrestled again. So
at a PCW show in Oak Lawn, one of their big shows, the guest was Christian Cage.
Yes.
They wrestled. And he seemed like a decent guy, and he was small on the smaller size. I was surprised, but he seemed like a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, I guess the only real problem they had with him was, I don't remember if it was after his match or after his interview, but he jumped the guardrail and went into the crowd and got mobbed. So they didn't have enough security to handle it. And it was just kind of, I don't know what he was thinking, but he hopped the guardrail and the fans swarmed him.
Just to shake his hand, you mean, or pat him on the back, that kind of thing.
He was Peter Christian. So.
I'm surprised he would do that because he's a veteran, and he's the kind of guy that can make anybody look good in the ring, I'm sure, after so many years in the business.
Yeah, because, the thing I always wanted there was I wanted Kevin Von Erich brought in, and I wanted to tag with him in a six-man. And they did bring him in after I was gone, after they got rid of me, but he didn't wrestle. He did the autograph thing.
And now his sons are wrestling, right, for MLW.
MLW, yeah, Ross and Marshall. So.
I think, yeah, I'm not sure how skilled they are, but I'm sure they're just getting started in the business. But
yeah, you know, I've only been in a few years. You know, I won't be, you know, I know MLW is trying to be legit, but I won't be surprised when their contract's up if somebody throws big money at them to get that Von Erich name, you know, because you can do a lot with that.
Yeah, yeah, that name is still important even today. But I'm glad
yeah,
that
and,
Kevin
know,
is happy and living in Hawaii. At least he's still with us.
Yeah, fortunately, you know, and I know Carrie's daughter was trying to get back in the business, Lacey. But I hope if she does, she actually gets some quality training because she was terrible when she was in TNA.
Yeah, I don't know who trained her, but she wasn't very good. She didn't last
yeah.
very long either for them.
No, well, she was signed to WWE when they had their – before NXT and they were running out of, like, Georgia and Florida. They were in the process of moving. So they did some work with her, but whatever they did, it didn't take.
No, you think if someone would have done a better job of training her?
But, you know, and sadly, you know, it happens where there are people who just aren't cut out to do it. They just don't – a lot of people don't realize the athletic ability it takes to actually be a professional wrestler. And some people just don't have that.
No, well, look at the two Von Erichs who tried to compete in world class. The two brothers who didn't make it, Mike and I forgot the other one, but just didn't have the physique. Yeah. They didn't have
yeah.
the physique and the skills, and it really showed.
Yeah, they were not ready to be put in the position they were put in, and it like you said, it showed. So
yeah, I guess I don't
know, maybe
see too much of them, but I guess David had the reputation of being the best of the Von Erichs, although I've only seen a couple of tapes of him in action.
Yeah, I've honestly always thought Kevin was the best worker, but I know everybody loved David, and he kind of fit the bill. He had the look of a professional wrestler, and, you know, he was bigger. He wasn't as big as Carrie, but he was taller, and he had the physique.
Yeah,
so,
you're right about that. He did look the part.
You know, and in a lot of cases, you know, that's what you need. While Kevin was in shape and he looked good, he wasn't big. He was muscular, but he wasn't big. So.
Yeah, Kerry was the one that was really muscular.
Yeah, Kerry had the bulk. Kerry carried the weight and had all the bulk to him. But, yeah, you know, Kevin was by far the better worker. You know, and I still think he was the best out of all of them, technically wise.
Yeah, well, I think Kerry was probably the worst out of all of them.
Yeah. You know, and oddly, he ended up being the one to win the NWA title.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was kind of a homage to David's passing, I think, when he did that.
That's why he only held on to it for a month. So.
Yeah, he lost it back in Japan, I think, very quickly.
That was a pretty – not as quick as the Tommy Rich turnaround. He only had it for 6 days, but –
Yeah, that was
you know,
a little quicker.
You know, and I'm trying – you know, well, now, you know, they – back then, that was a big deal. I remember Tommy Rich winning it, and it was a huge deal. And even Kerry winning it, was a huge deal. Now they changed so much, nobody cares.
There's so much turnover in terms of the belts, and I can't keep track of all the belts they have, too.
And, you know, I will give AEW credit. They're not passing around their heavyweight title like WWE does. So.
Yeah, I was surprised they did a credible ending in their match on Wednesday when Miro won the title, which...
Well, you know, remember, Alan got hurt the week before, so they had an excuse for him to lose. So. Don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed at Sports Time Radio. I am also on Twitter at Sports Time, that's UURKTV. I'm Eddie. If you're going to find this in the field, I'd like to go next.
might be a first thing to do or not, but don't forget, access is available to listen to you anytime you want. That's all. Have a good weekend, everybody.